Well, what do you guys think? We should do it, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay. We can even do it better. we'll do more my iron. First thing I wanted to give you guys is you should see what this is. Well, maybe I could save this for the end. This is a healthcare proxy from the RCA, the Biblical Council of America. It's dramatically different. You know what healthcare proxy means?
He's my... What's it called? If someone's elder can't make decisions for himself, that person makes the decision.
Right. Okay. So, proxy is what it's called.
Is there a
concept? Right. Actually, we're going to come back to this at the end because there are several shitos. It's an interesting machlok is Aguda versus RCA. And this one, I think, clear and far and away the Aguda has a much more. Let me use the right word. They have a much more not only practical but alpi din, more tenable approach to what to do. And what everybody's talking about is that there was a big problem with at the end of life, Achamei Ve'esrim, that decisions were being made by doctors, hospital administrators, hospital ethicists, and taken away from families and patients. And to assure that not happen, so it's advocated that people prepare. This is not negated to you guys at all. People start thinking about it when they start having kids. That's the first time they start to think about it. And most people don't really get around to doing it till they're much older. Like, I haven't gotten around to doing it yet. But I advocated it in theory. Meaning, it's just my wife and I had interesting discussions on this topic. But we'll get our act together. But the bottom line is, you'll see, it's an important thing to do, lo aleinu, achamei ve'esrim, because it gives you control. Meaning it gives a religious person, a religious Jewish person, control in decisions that will be taken away from them otherwise. And you'll see what I mean. But let's get to the Makoros. So we're up to the page, I'm not sure what number it is. Anyone know? With the Gemara in the Darin, Suvos.
Five.
You're there. Five makes sense. Yes, page five. Page five has the Gemaras. And what is this all about? We're about to now get a feel, a perspective on what options are available to a religious person, a religious Jewish person, in making decisions at the end of life. And of course, we're assuming that we're dealing with the following types of patients. A patient that is either, all the patients are to some degree terminal, but we'll see, not necessarily. Let's start with the terminal patients. In a terminal patient who, by definition, has no option or no potential for cure. So if they are racked in pain, so there is a very appropriate human desire for their pain to end. Right? And ideally that would mean while still alive, but sometimes it means that you can't get them out of pain while they're alive. And that you'll think that the best thing, what's in their best interest, is that they shouldn't be alive anymore. So what kind of flexibility is there available within halacha for such a situation? The other situation is a person who is unconscious and unable to, he's not necessarily in pain, and this is a big machlokas, someone in a persistent vegetative state, which means they're not brain dead by anyone's definition, they're totally alive because their brain stem is working, but they're unconscious, they're not doing anything that we can tell from a conscious perspective. They're not interacting with anyone. At most, they might have pain stimulation, positive, but they're really not doing anything. So, what about that person? What kind of status do they have? Would we ever consider doing things or being passive about their care? Those are two very separate groups. Pain is one thing, and then assuming a value on a human life that's not conscious is another. So what we need to do before we see, you're going to see that there's a lot of machlokas over this. There's a lot of variation amongst the poskim. How you doing? Now I just wanted you to see, before we get into the machlokas, what does everybody agree on? That helps give a real perspective. So on the top of this page, you'll see written in English, I hope it's, I don't know if I have a new hand that or an you see the line across there? Everybody agrees? Everybody agrees that Ritzicha is Asr. Good? Anyone having a problem with that? Good. Ritzicha is Asr. Active suicide is Asr. That's the Chulian Alma also. Person cannot take their own life in an active way? Absolutely. Everybody agrees. What's the pasuk that teaches you that? Anyone know? Ach es dimchem l'nafsho seichem edrosh. Right? That is dimchem l'nafsho seichem means that you're gonna be. It's almost like saying you're chayv misa for killing yourself. Right? It's kind of like a little funny. Right? You're chayv misa for killing yourself. But min hashamayim, it's looked very negatively upon a person who commits suicide. Suicide is one of the worst errors a person can do. It's like taking the law into your own hands. The punishments that are described for people that commit suicide are horrendous, you know, really horrendous. Now, let's get a perspective on that before we even go on. Does that mean a person who's despondent, is suffering from depression, and commits suicide, is viewed as someone who did such a tremendous avera? What do you think?
I thought it was someone who specifically commits suicide out of a higher belief that he needs to separate his soul from his body in order
right.
to try.
Or that, like the way you put it, is good. Or merit, where a person is like, you know, his act of rebellion against the HaKadosh Baruch Hu is to do that. Oh, you're gonna make me live and work in this world to make myself better and be productive. I'll show you. That's merit. That's not a despondent person. That might be a psychotic person, which has to be also kind of figured out, because the person who's an anus, either because they're mamish crazy or they're mamish despondent, is not committed suicide as an avera to the degree that we're saying achas dimchen nafsho secha nedrosh. And the nafkaminas are very significant. The nafkaminas are, you know, a person who commits suicide, al hidin, you don't, you know, they don't get buried with Jews, they don't get, you know, tzitshiva for them. There's very strict halachas, but you'll rarely see this applied, because in general, in our times, when lo aleinu chas v'shalom, that type of event occurs, it's almost always in the setting of a person, Rechman Atzlan, is depressed and has a real illness and is considered an anus. But needless to say, the act of suicide is an aver. It would definitely apply even to a person who's in tremendous pain. They might be an anus, and that's up to Hashem to decide, but that's not the answer. Right? And that's the Chulei Alma. What about passive suicide? What's an example of passive suicide, by the way?
Allowing yourself to turn on someone?
Not taking medicine?
Pills?
Right. So that would be a person who purposely... That's active. And taking pills, overdose, that's an active suicide. Not taking medication that the doctor wants you to because you want to just die and you know that you need this to be alive, that would be a passive form of suicide. Another one would be, let's say, Dr. Kevorkian. Everyone know who that was? Remember Dr. Kevorkian? You might have been young when he was out there in the news. Does anyone know who he was? Anyone ever?
His name was on those Apple's cards.
Yeah, really? He was, in my opinion, a Rasha. And I'll tell you what I mean by that. I always thought at first that he meant well. There are a lot of doctors like this. They're advocates. Doctors, unfortunately, see, and anyone going into medicine should be aware of this, they see a lot of suffering. They definitely might see a lot of suffering. Particularly in the adult realm. We have it better in pediatrics. We see less suffering. In adult medicine, you go in a hospital, you're seeing suffering all the time. And for that reason, they become very much advocates of ending it. We can't do anything, just end it, the person's suffering. And they get this mindset. Dr. Kevorkian was an extremist on this, and he was an advocate for assisted suicide, which meant that he was pushing that doctors, part of the repertoire should be, you know, we have a responsibility to cure people, and now he held should be part of the Hippocratic Oath to be responsibility to kill people, right? There's a, you know, he took Ace Lamus to a whole new meeting, and he developed a device that he considered a humane device that really basically gassed the person to death. You know, it was like, and it gave a whole cocktail of drugs. Which, you know, the person was passive. That was the idea. Like, I'll do it, you won't do it. And that would be another major publicized form of passive suicide. L'chuli alma, aser. Right? Any type of where And why is passive suicide awesome? So, on the one hand, it's murder. at the very least, you are misayeya to a murderer. Even though you're the victim, but that's still murder. He's committing murder.
Wait, is that good off in the category of Taibahem? Are you supposed to
have
a mitzvah to live?
Yes, yeah, so we have Unishmartin es nafsho sechem me'od would be more the push on that. Bechaibahem is really referring to mitzvahs. But you could put the two together. You could do that.
We're saying Asa Lechuliyam is after the person for himself to make passive suicide.
We're going to see,
passively kill someone else.
Right. We're going to see there's going
to
be latitude. There's going
to
be some latitude, meaning we're going to be drawing very subtle lines in a few moments as to things you could do that amounts, according to some definitions, to passive suicide. So, per se, to the kavana do passive suicide is awesome. Okay. We're going to have to draw a line. So this is a kind of a setup. We'll have to see. We're going to make distinctions between what can be done and what not, and then we're going to have to try to define it. We're not the only ones that are grappling with this. You're going to see these six shittos are going to be grappling with all these fine lines. And it's all going to come out of the Makaris on this one page. Active euthanasia. What does active euthanasia mean?
Sure.
It means killing somebody, but for good intentions and good reasons, right? When I said mitzicha zaser, so that meant maybe killing someone for a bad reason. Now I'm saying, let's say you have good intentions, the person's suffering, like the classic story in the newspaper is the 7-year-old man shot his wife in the head because he was taking care of her with cancer and he couldn't take it anymore and he decided to make her feel better. So he put her out of her misery. So
that happened recently?
That happens all the time. I mean, unfortunately, there's always like a story like that. Some countries are so liberal about this that it's legal to do it. In other words, if you could prove circumstances, even if it's not on the books as legal, it's never ever prosecuted. Right? This is not true in the United States, but in, like, I think it's Dutch or that way. There's certain European countries where they're extremely liberal in this area, and it's known, like, if you want to die, you want to find a good place to die, you know, you go to one of these countries and you're in good shape. Right? So in the United States, where they won't allow active suicide and all that kind of stuff, except for, like, and Kevorkian was put in jail, the guy I told you about before, and he thought he was going to get like a whole groundswell of people supporting him. Part of the reason I call him a Russia is when it comes out, the details, when you read the details of the people he treated, he was like going over the line even for their thinking. Meaning, you know, somebody had a little
paper cut.
Yeah, that's like that would be a joke exaggerating it, but it's not so far off. The kind of people he was knocking off were not what we would consider terminally ill people who were really ill. He was like someone depressed. He's not a psychiatrist. He had no right to make that, even in his thinking. Like he's not going to be guided by Torah. He's going to be guided by what he thinks is ethical and humane. And yet, so I understand the terminally ill person who has nothing left but suffering. So I can understand the guy who's not held in check by halacha that he's going to start thinking that way. But he was going well, which is maybe part of the reason it should be usher altogether, even in the secular world, is like, you know, he takes a person who's, let's say, got a condition that makes them miserable. Diabetes is a miserable condition, particularly in advanced stages, and has a lot of tircha to it. But the person could live a life, and that person would be, by most people's standards, not someone who should be committing suicide. They might be very depressed because they have a very difficult life. So the treatment is not Kevorkian. The treatment is psychiatry, medications to help, counseling, you know, whatever you can do. But, you know, it's a challenge, no doubt. But Kevorkian was like abusing it. And that's why there's no limud schus on him, on people like that. And then the final, number five, that everybody agrees to is this Radvaz. The Radvaz that I think we've encountered in other settings, which is that when the Rambam says, right, that not only the Rambam, based on the Gemara, says, Ein Adam Osim Esatzmo Rasha. Right, what does that mean? What does that klal mean? Ein Adam Osim Esatzmo Rasha. Anyone know? A person cannot what?
Make himself rasha.
Right, so what does it mean? What does it mean in the Gemara? No one's seen this sugya ever? Alright, we gotta get more mesechtas down. So, Ein Adam Osim Esatzmo Rasha, Sanhedrin, it's in Makos. It's next year. Anyone be here next year?
Maybe.
Okay, good. So next year you'll learn it. So it means a person cannot be incriminating themselves to be mechayev malchus or nisa.
Okay, can't prove themselves wrong.
Right, so that's something else. In other words, like no one, not only Eden Zomim, but it's in that near that sugya, right? No one can ever be mechayev themselves. You can't come forward and admit I did something that will be mechayev you in malchus or nisa. It's just not going to happen. Ain't other Muslims also Russia. So why? Why not? You know, you're telling the truth. And especially the Radvaz asks on this Rambam, it's Rambam in Hilchos Sanhedrin. I think it's Perek Yud Ches. It's a very Perek Yud Ches. Or Perek Beis Halacha Yud Ches. Something like that. The Radvaz asks, how come when it comes to that, Ein Adam Osim Tzasa or Russia? But what about in Dine Mamonos? What's the call by a person's own testimony about themselves in Dine Mamonos? Right, Hodas Valdin Kemeya Edim Dami. Right? So the Ravaz asks, why when it comes to Dine Mamonos, I can incriminate myself and testify, and I'm like Meya Edim, it's great. But when it comes to Malchus and Misa, Ein Adam Mesim Sasma Rasha. So he explains, anyone? What's the big difference between those two?
Because there's no recompensation by Misa. Like you're not helping out the victim. Being with Dine Mamonos, if you
That's not bad, but I'll crack it by saying Hodas Valdin Kamea Adam Dam and Dina Mamonos, even if he's not gonna get money, even if you're not gonna pay back, but you're gonna get found guilty and you're gonna maybe become a slave or something. But it's not related necessarily to that. That's not a bad idea. That would have been a good answer. But the Radvaz says that a person doesn't have bilus on his own goof to have anything be done to it. Malchus or Misa. You just don't have bilus. We don't have the right to do with our bodies as we please. So that's the automatic response of halacha to what major principle of the secular bioethicists? Autonomy, right? They're going to be shouting in this area from day to night, autonomy, autonomy, autonomy. The patient should decide what's done with his body, and that's it. If they want to die, they die. If they want to, like, have this type of DNR, they should have it. Everything should be open because the most important thing is what a person wants. But we, the Torah, does not give us that type of license. We don't view that our bodies are our possessions to that degree. We don't have bilus. Hashem has bilus. We're borrowing it, right? We're borrowing the body and we have full responsibility to watch it. Okay. So that is also the Chuliyah. So where the disagreement comes in is in the Pshat that's offered by the following sugyas. So let's do them one at a time, starting with one that's not here. Okay, but it's the background for the first one. There's a Gemara in Ksuvos on Daf Kuf Dal, very famous Gemara you might have heard of. When Rebbe Yehuda Hanasi was dying, who knows the story? Anybody? Say it again.
Fingers.
Right. So tell me more. What was the circumstances? What kind of disease did he die of? Do you know? He died of a gastrointestinal disease. Because the Gemara describes that he was constantly going to the bathroom and he had to put on his tefillin and take off his tefillin and put on. He's wearing tefillin all day. But he constantly had to go into the bathroom, so he's putting on his tefillin and taking off his tefillin. He was suffering greatly. So he was on his deathbed and the Gemara describes all his Talmidim, right? Rebbe was life for the Jewish people. Like I can't go into it now because we'll never get through these Makaros. But what the Gemara says about Rebbe, he describes Rebbe in terms of his impact on the Jewish people. He's in the top five of greatest Jews ever, right? He was something. The Talmidim and the Jewish community could not bear the thought of him dying. So they were being mispalo, that he should stay alive. And it was working. It was such a koch hatfilah, it was unbelievable. And then the famous Amsa Debei Rebbe. Anyone ever hear of the Amsa Debei Rebbe? Amsa Debei Rebbe was Rebbe's handmaiden. This woman, she's all over Gemara's.
She looks funny.
Very, very close to Rebbe. Like, she's a Talmidah Chachama, right? She had clout in Halacha, right? So she's watching. So at first, the Gemara describes, she says, yes, let it be Hashem, let it be Yeratzon, that the Tachtonim defeat the Elyonim. The Elyonim were trying to get, you know, Kivyachal and Malachim, whatever's up there, they were trying to get Rebbe's Neshama, and the Tachtonim are trying to keep it down here. So the Amstibir Rebbe says, oh, of course I want the Tachtonim to win. Then the Gemara describes, and then she saw his suffering, the tefillin, and on and off, and his pain, and his agony, and he said, no, Yiratzon, that the Elyonim should win. And she was mispalelis that should happen. And then, different versions, but one version is, like, she interrupted the tefillos. We'll have to come back to this. She like had it, she dropped the jar, and suddenly their tefillos were interrupted, and Rebbe died. So that's our first source. What? Yes. So that's our first source, is this act and the tefillah of Amsa de Beirut. Clearly she was mispalelis because of the suffering that the Elyonim should win and that it should end. So the Ran in the Durham. So one might have thought like this. Should that hold halachic weight? Amsa de Beirut. We had, I don't know, all the Talmidei Chachamim lined up davening that he should say a lot.
No, because well, that's not Rabbi Yehuda actually making the decision himself. It's like a doctor making the decision for someone else.
Okay. That's true, but I guess the issue is how much clout does she really have? I told you she has some in other
Gemaras. So whether she was right or not.
No, she's giving a halachic opinion. That's the way the Rishonim actually understood this. Versus all those Talmidei Chachamim or the rest of the people that were davening, I would have thought, and this is what is emphasized by Rav Waldenberg, but Tzitz Eliezer, against everybody else, and you'll see why. Rav Waldenberg says, how do we paskin like Amsa de Beirut? We're paskin like the Talmidei Chachamim, right? He's the only one that says that. I'm shocked, because when I learned that sugya, I said, who cares? You know, like she's an emotional woman. You know, let's go with the Talmidei Chachamim. So the only one who says that, there's only one individual, Rishon Achron, that says this really, and that's Tzitz Eliezer of Oldenburg. What does everyone else do? They quote this Ram. So that's the first one in Makor Satah. This is in the context of in the Darim, where the Gemara was, the Mishnah had been discussing certain things that if the person makes a neder, they get no hana from another person. What are you allowed to do? What you're not allowed to do? Right? Anyone familiar with these Mishnayos? Anyway, so one of the things is, can you be Mavakir Chola? Can you be Mavakir Chola? So the Mishnah, the Gemara, gets into discussion about Bikur Chola. So in the middle of it says that it started getting in a tangent on how important the mitzvah of Bikur Chola is. Why is the mitzvah of Bikur Chola important? Anybody? Good. So straightforward, it's an act of chesed, and with that, if you Mavakir Chola, you could do a great act of chesed. Why is it a great act of chesed? Right. Why is it an act of refuah?
Psychologically also.
Good. Good. Everybody good. So
160th or something like that?
Right, so is on you, right? But that's the idea. But okay, good. So you're actually doing a mamish refuah, that's what you're saying. What's doing the mamish refuah? How are you doing refuah? So you say psychological benefits?
I think it's 100%. Because let's say of a man someone whose chassid sham is like really terminally ill. And the thought comes into their mind that maybe I shouldn't let them end it, right?
Right.
And people come to do the Gecholim for you, they're showing that it won't be worth it to do that. That it's worth it for living on earth.
Right. And definitely, that's a very important message that when you when people notice people are not coming, they're getting a message that people are giving up, and it's very detrimental to them. And it's particularly true with a doctor. When a doctor doesn't stop seeing a patient, it's the worst message in the world. And that also happens. So psychologically, it's an incredible thing. What else? What's the obvious? Physically, mamashos. You know, you go and help them. But what? It's interesting. The Shulchan Aruch, when it talks about the reason you should do the mitzvah of Bikur Cholim, so it mentions these two. It actually mentions both of these, but it says the ikar is closer to what you were saying, which is the ideal place to be mispala for the chola is at the bedside of the chola, because the shechina is right above his head. And it says that's the main reason you should do Mavakir Chol. Why do I stress this? Because you really should do this. When you do this mitzvah, and I'm sure all of us do it, be mispalo by the Chol.
I think it was from last year, but I was saying, they said if you go to visit someone and you're not mispalo for them, then you're not Machai, you didn't fulfill the mitzvah of Bikur Chol.
Right, exactly. That's what the Shulchan Aruch says. He's getting it straight forward in the Shulchan Aruch. So, can't emphasize it enough.
Smart, I mean, if you don't go, you can't down for them.
No, you can daven them wherever, but you want to be mekayim the mitzvah bikur cholim. Realize that an essential component. It's not luchul yom ma'akev, but there it could be understood that way. Even that you really haven't fulfilled the kiyum of bikur cholim unless you daven there by the bedside.
Is davening there included in saying hopefully you should get better? This that like just simply saying something in English like that, does that work as prayer, or is it actually have to be some type of formal prayer?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's like you could say whatever you want to yourself, but it's between you and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, right? Actually, the Nosek Kehan discuss, does it matter if it's in English? Does it matter if it's in Lashon HaKodesh? They actually ask this question. And it's interesting, they say, you know, that in it'll work in any language. Hashem understands any language, or that kind of comment. Like, you could, ideally, you should say Rafa'inu. You could say that. Tehillim, within mind, the Rafua. But it's your Kavana that this is, that it should be Rafua for the, you know, for the person who is ill.
Stephen Lester said, just says, Kelma Rafana.
Would be enough. That's the shortest tefillah that there is. Right, Moshe, that's the one modeled after Moshe in the Chumash. Right. But I would think that if you don't think of that and you just misfollow, that you will be Yotze, that would be good.
Is there any concept in Judaism that, like, based on the word of a doctor, no matter, like, depending on the situation, I know we went over the fact that the person has no right to declare himself the right to end it.
Right.
Is there any concept of once a professional makes his word, saying that there is no chance that the person still has to go through the suffering?
Right, that's what we're getting at. We're going to see exactly.
The word of a professional, does that mean anything?
Does it mean anything? Yes, it does, and we'll see in a moment. And it'll be essential, but these makaros are going to be the background for the next two pages after are six shitos, and we're going to see six opinions, right? And we're going to group them into three, right? They're going to be pairs. You'll see what I mean by that. There's three basic approaches that are out there for how to handle these situations and telling you exactly what you could do and not do. Okay, let's just get through this. So what does the Gemara then say? Kol she'ein mevaker chola, ein mevaker shalav rachamim, lo sheyichya velo sheyamos. So Gemara makes a very funny comment, very weird comment. It says, anyone, this relates to what we were just talking about, anyone who doesn't do biker cholim is doing a bad thing. Why? Because he's not able to be mevakish alav on the chola rachamim. He's not able to be mispala for the chola. Not that he should live and not that he should die. So, whoa, what does that mean? I understand the part about losing your opportunity to have him live, but what's the opportunity to have him die? So the Ran says what's probably obvious to all of us. He quotes this Gemara from Ksuvos. This is what gives Amsa de Beirevi all the power. And this is why all the Achronim are going to follow, basically, this lead of the Ran. The Ran is a Rishon. There aren't any Rishonim that give an alternative pshat. And the Ran comes and he paskins Amsa de Beirevi was correct. And he says, Nira be'enai dehachi kamar. You want to know what pshat in this Gemara is? Pa'amim shitzarach lebakish rachamim alachola sheyamos. And what would be an example of that? Kigon shemitztayer hachola becholyav harbe ve'efshar lo sheyichya. Right? If you have a terminal case and the person is suffering greatly, that is a setting where it is okay to be spala that they should die. Now, the way Rabbanim will tell families lo aleinu to handle this is who wants to ever be mispala that their loved one should die? You know, even if they're suffering, you never would put it that way. So the normal way that it is, the tefillah is sort of like, Hashem, can you have this end with the least amount of suffering? That type of expression. That's the type of tefillah. You never really want to be ever mouthing the words that someone should die. Okay, so that was that sugya. Alright, that sugya is going to be really important and it's going to be used differently by various poskim. We'll see in a moment.
Just
or not.
Practical, yes, hopefully it's quick. Someone, let's say, has cancer and it is terminal, the doctor's given the year, the classic year, and then it turns out that for some reason he's going past that year, it goes on to 2 years, 3 years, and even 4 years, and he does pass away after 4 years. But that was 3 years past what the doctors gave him. So in these cases, I don't know how it works with feel like. At some point, do we say, do we use that phrase? Do we say that he should keep living because listening, he's already outlived what the doctor said? Like, mm-hmm. It's a
well,
situation.
With the numbers that you gave, it's hard for me to imagine any legitimate scenario that type of patient would be in the category that we're talking about. In other words, like, that patient's terminal, right? Now, terminal has two meanings. You're using it correctly. In other words, terminal means there's no chance for survival, right? There's no cure. So there is a terminal illness called cystic fibrosis, and that could last 25, 30 years, but
right.
It still is not curable, so we'll use that expression. Those certainly wouldn't be one that, you know, at birth, this person's diagnosed, or usually it's in infancy, they're diagnosed with cystic fibrosis, and they'll say, all right, let's be misfollowed, they should die, right? So where do you draw the line? So it's basically, we're talking terminal in the sense of imminent. You know, somebody who's got like a year, that's chayolam. No one should be davening for a guy who's got a year the end in court. Right? It's not even in the, it's not even in the parsha of what we're talking about. I would never. I mean, al pidin. There are people in the secular world that will feel differently than I do. Dr. Gavorkin certainly does, right? But I think that's not the type of patient we're talking about at all.
How long ago was Dr. Gavorkin?
I think he's in. Let's see, I was in medical school, I think, when he was around. So it's like early '90s, late '80s, right? Early '90s. I think that's when he was doing his stuff. I mean, he's been in the news a lot, anyways. That's when he started. That's when he killed his first patient, and he kept getting away with it somehow in the beginning. Then they put him in jail, and like he got out, and then they put him back because he did it again. Like, it was unbelievable. Put him in jail, they let him out right away. First thing, this guy like had an obsession. You know, it was like unbelievable. But he never got. I think, you know, one state, I think, allowed Oregon. I think actually was Matir, his approach, but it didn't catch on. He didn't get this groundswell he thought he was going to get. This whole, if you know, you've into these things, you Google it. There's whole organizations dedicated to allowing people to be killed and die and all that stuff. It becomes an obsession with people, and I understand why when they go through a harrowing experience. There's nothing worse than watching your loved one suffer, but you can't lose your perspective completely. So now. The other makoros, this is a very important one, on the left over here from Ksuvos, the Gemara discusses the following. What's worse from a Jewish perspective? Suffering or dying? Much worse. Kind of question, right? What's a nafkamina? When would this come in? In other words, well, one nafkamina is our whole discussion, right? Is it better that the guy should die, end his life, or better that he should continue suffering, pain? So, is it that we just think that suffering's good and that kind of thing, like I was telling you the other day? So this Gemara is an interesting discussion. It's not so pashut. It isn't as pashut as we think.
Could it depend on what the person's able to do while he's suffering? For example, like in the case of Rebbe, even though he was suffering, he's still able to perform the tefillin, although it was on and off in an inconvenient way. He was
right, so yeah, our assumption is on all these cases, there's still value to that life. There's still value to that life despite the suffering. And even if a person's not able physically to do mitzvos, he can mentally do mitzvos, right? Chai Isha has value. Very famous sugya in the Gemara in Yuma, and it's a halacha in Shulchan Aruch, that if a person's it relates to that Gemara we did when we did brain death, the previous Gemara, if a person is like a building falls on them and they're completely smashed, they're merutzatz, they're like split open and they're like just gonna die, and they have like 20 minutes left, can I be Michal Shabbos to save that life, right? So are they gonna be Shomer any more Shabbos? It's Monday. They got 20 minutes. They're not going to be Shomer Shabbos anymore. So the psak is what? Can I be Mechal Shabbos to save a 20-minute life?
Yeah.
Of course. Of course. Every minute of life is of infinite value. That person's certainly suffering. He's certainly not able to do anything. So why am I allowed to save his life? Why am I allowed to be Mechal Shabbos? So there's two approaches. One is, well, the calculus of observance approach, that's what it's called in fancy scholarly terminology, which means the Meiri. The Meiri says, you want to know why you can save that guy's life? It's true, he doesn't have chalalav Shabbos achas, kidei sheyishmo Shabbos harbe, but he could be chozer b'tshuva. In those 20 minutes, he could be chozer b'tshuva. I'm not going to give him that opportunity to do it. It's an interesting approach, because it says that it's not giving an absolute value to the life. It's saying the only reason I'm allowed to be Mechal Shabbos is because he could do another mitzvah that's bigger. Like you're saying, but it's all about that. Comes along Rov Rishonim, they say, that's not it. Right? And this is where we get into trouble with non-Bnei Bris and Bnei Bris people. I could be Mechal Shabbos for that. Now, if it was a calculus of observance equation, then that gives a means of me to separate religious Jews from non-religious Jews or non-Bnei Bris from Bnei Bris, because the only reason I'm allowed to be Mechal Shabbos, forget about biological life, that doesn't mean anything, is because I know they're going to be able to be Shomer more mitzvahs. So if the guy's not, then I can't be Mechal Shabbos now. Right? And if it all comes down to that. But that's the minority opinion. The majority opinion is I could save his life because every moment of life has infinite value objectively, even if the person's never going to do another mitzvah. And the Chafetz Chaim gets so, like, you know, like, I don't want to say emotional about the Chafetz Chaim, but it's so moved by the need to emphasize this idea, he starts a whole bir halacha discussing it, and he throws in, and this is why, even if he's a total, you know, shote, he has no abilities, like a totally defective, handicapped person, all of it the same, it's the value of the life per se, as long as he's a Yisrael. That's what he throws in. So, okay. And therefore, that tells you a message too, by the way. That gives an absolute very high level to life despite suffering, right? That's going to be a very important sugya for us as well, and it's going to be brought up by some of our poskim. Look, we machal Shabbos for the person with 20 minutes left. So you're going to tell me, because they're suffering, we're going to end their life, or we're going to allow their life to end? We could be machal Shabbos, but you can allow their life to end? They're going to find that very difficult. Comes along the Gemara Ksuvos and it says the following.
Even according to the Iri, though,
yeah.
Theoretically, even the guy has, he has, even if not a religious Jew, he has that potential. Still, like once, you know, all the stories of people like.
Do tshuva, right. So that's very important because the halacha lemaisa, right? According to the Iker Adin and this calculation, you cannot be Mechal Shabbos for a non-from person. Right? A person who's not Mechal. A person who's not Shem Shabbos, whatever. However, lemaisa, it's not true. We can. And the reason is, various reasons given, I think it's the Ran and the Ramban that say what you just said. They say, but everyone's going to be Chazer B'Tshuva or could be Chazer B'Tshuva, especially a guy who's like, you know, in the foxhole, right? There's no atheist in the foxhole idea. That's the time when everybody's that's the matir, not a non-Jew.
Not a
non-Jew? Doesn't get us that far. It gets us to all the non-religious Jews.
Yeah, there are atheists in Fox.
Right? Yeah. But the non-Jew is going to be a non-Jew. And, you know,
so you're not allowed to call Shabbat to say a non-Jew?
Right. Halacha Maisi, you can definitely and must. Mi'ikar Din, you cannot. But Mishum Pikuach Nefesh Eva, you can. So Halacha Maisi, you certainly do. But this was the topic that we're going to do. We're going to do this topic. All right, that's just, I'm taking too long, but I want to tell you about this Gemara, and then we'll continue on my... So this Gemara over here from Ksuvos says the following. It's, I find this one of those... What? No, that's interesting. We have 3 minutes, so here we go. Gemara says like this. Everyone knows how Onish works. What do you need to be Ma'anish somebody who doesn't have Aveda? What's the, how does it work?
Hasra.
Good. That's the word I was looking for. Hasra. What does Hasra mean?
Warning.
Right? Someone's not going to get Mabuz, they're not going to get Misa unless they get Hasra. Let's say they did an Aveira for which they were Chayiv Malkus. That was the real thing they're Chayiv. But I gave them Hasra about Misa. But I made a mistake. Right? I thought this Aveira was a Chayiv Misa, but it was really a Chayiv Malkus. So I gave them Hasra and I said, you know, if you do this thing, you're going to be Chayiv Misa. They go and they do the Avera. Does that count?
No.
Yes or no?
I think it does.
Yeah, well, the warning you gave them was more strict than
that. That's what the Gemara says. The Gemara says, Kavachomer, right?
There's another way around, maybe. But...
Right, maybe we're something to talk about, right? That's the problem. Which is worse? There's the Gemara first says, Kavachomer, like, if you're going to give them for the Chamor, right, and they do the Kal, certainly that you can't. Right? That's at first, the Havamim of the Gemara. Then the Gemara says, if, over here. But wait a second. That continues on the daf you have. Dilma Malkus Chamor. Who says which is more Chamor? Which is worse, pain or death? So the Gemara continues, the Amar Rav Ilmale Nigduha Lechananya Mishava Azarya Pachu Letzalma. Who can give me pshat in that line? Anyone? Come on, guys. Who knows what the word Nagduha means? Tortured. Torture. What is Palchu Letzalma? They would have bowed down to the idol. Who were Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah? Anyone know? Right. Why? Because they refused to bow down to the idol. So they were such tzaddikim. They were Mosen Nefesh. Right? You can't do Avodah Zarah just because your life's threatened. You have to be Mosen Nefesh when the big three. So what is this Gemara saying?
If they would have been tortured instead of killed, then they would have done it.
They would have actually done it. What's the implication of that? So that's a Machlokas Rishonim. Right, go ahead. What's, one side is...
It's worse to get Malkus than it is to be thrown into.
Right. It could be, this is a Raya, that torture is worse pain and torture is worse than death. This would have very big ramifications for us. We're talking Al-Bidin is worse.
That would depend what the death penalty you would receive would be.
And you hear what it's saying? Wait, I'll just finish this. Well, good, we'll get to you in a second. It's saying that while Avodah Zarah is Yahar V'Yavar, but it's not get tortured V'Yavar. Over V'Al get tortured. That's the implication. And that is how certain Rishonim learned it out. So, what does the Gemara respond, by the way? See what the Gemara responds? What's the difference? Tosfos right away asks, and many ask, wait a second, why is this no Raya? Why is this the Raya for Malkus? Right? We're trying to say, you know, the Torah's onish of Malkus is not worse than death, yet torturing would have been worse than death. What's the chiluk between the torturing they were going to get and Malkus?
Malkus is a kapara.
Right, so any Yisrael could be a kapara. But what's the difference in terms of why I would, in Mitzius, let's say in reality, why would I think, perhaps, what they were going to get, the torture they were going to get, that might be worse than death, but not Malkus.
It's done with malice and purposely...
Well, think about the pain, and the nature of the pain, and the setting of the pain. And read the Gemara. Look at what the Gemara says. Somebody give me the answer, and we'll stop with this.
Pain that will never end.
Pain that will never end. Right. Versus pain that has an ending. In other words, this can make a difference. In other words, if there's pain, like the torture they were going to get, they would have no end. They would know when it could go on and on. Maybe and on. Malchus is a finite, you know, time to it.
Like cutting off limbs, would there be pain at an end because you're living with your life?
Right, pretty much. That would be, I would think, in that category. So, and you don't know, like, they're going to do it slowly in, like, some kind of torturous way. But Malchus, you know, I got these 39 lashes or whatever it's going to be. So that is not worse. Death is worse than that, because that I can take. Unlimited torture is worse than that.
Also,
so we have to see if that's going to play a role in our cheshbonos.
I mean, a lot of times the torture will lead to the death. It doesn't matter how quick the death comes, for example. But... in the San Antonio story, whoever that was.
Right.
Right, so he's cutting off his limbs
and his tongue.
So he was able to live for, you know, long enough to write this, but in the end...
Yeah, I found that amazing. I found that amazing part of the story. But he still was able to live long enough to...
No, it's not the end of the story. Like, he came to someone in a dream and told it to him. He said it over. Is that the end of the story?
Or is that the Medrash?
I thought he opened up the Aron.
Yeah, and then he died.
He went up there and he died.
And then he came
there.
Later on to drink to someone.
All right, he didn't. You're right. And then that's how it was recorded, right?
Yeah. Oh, either way, so right. They torture them so that the pain lasts for a day or two,
right?
But it'll lead to the death. But is that considered pain to an end or pain that it leads to a very very slow death, or?
Right, in other words, pain with an end is pain that when you get the pain, you know it's going to end. And you know when. And you know, that makes it finite. But even a person who's terminally ill, let's say I'm going to now extrapolate out to there, and like a person who had his limbs chopped off, he doesn't know when the end is going to be. It could go on endlessly. It's not like there's a finite number. Like Malchus, okay, 38, 39, right? Over. As opposed to, okay, I know I'm going to die, but I don't know exactly when. That's still endless. That's still endless pain. The Tosfos brings in the story of Rabbi Akiva, right? Well, with this, right? What was Rabbi Akiva's martyrdom seems to contradict this Gemara, right? Because the mashmut of the Gemara is that endless torture overrides Yad V'Yavar, overrides the Avera of Avodah Zarah. But from Rabbi Akiva, what we learned, B'chol Nafshecha includes what was going on with him. What was going on with him? He was getting his whole face raked with... raked with the iron, you know, with combs, the iron combs, and he was being tortured endlessly. And yet, he still had to endure it. Akivah Hashem. So,
maybe it's different.
Tosfos is machria, like Rabbi Akiva's story, against this. And he says, you have to even withstand torture.
That's the point that, like, they were planning, I mean, that torture was killing him. They weren't.
Right, ultimately, but again, it's the same as we just said before. In other words, let's say he was definitely going to die at the end of that, right? But he doesn't have a hold on when that end is going to be. So it's in his mind.
It's also when you get thrown into the fire, you don't know when you're gonna, when exactly.
I would say getting thrown into a fire is like an endless torture, not like a finite torture. Just because you know it's gonna end when you die, but it's not like there's an end in sight.
It went into the fire.
Huh?
It went into the fire.
Oh, you're saying these guys. So that they
seemingly that
so it must have constituted for them just a quick death, like, and not a really torturous thing in that sense.
It's controlled, meaning versus someone else who's a human can do whatever he wants. The fire at some point it's going to consume you. It doesn't have the will to draw itself back, come back, and go back away. Like, it's
right, it must have been of such intensity or something that it was more of a controlled situation. But really, it'll come down to that. And for our purposes, we have to see, does this chiluk really have any halacha lemaisa implications that most terminal cases are the endless type of pain? It's not finite. It's not like malchus. It's like endless, lower limit. Alright, we'll stop with that. And we'll pick up, we'll just finish up three more makaros, and then we'll see how the Gedolim handled that.
Wait, wasn't there any chiluk because of the fact that he was a general and a class?
So he might have had a bigger field.
Right.
Right, sure. How did
No, I haven't.